Jumping into the conversation, we right away started talking about cryptocurrency, precious metals, psychology, and all kinds of other topics, all before I learned how to pronounce this guest's last name. Nicholas Proughton and I talked about the project he's creating called LOAD and modernizing precious metals for the modern world. See, there's a huge movement to return to that standard because of the inherent lure of the metals, but how we buy, sell, and trade has gotten a bit ancient. It's time for a facelift. We're talking about the value of money, investing in assets, and what it takes to get people on board with high-tech currency that you find in cryptocurrency. Find out more about his mission to make crypto and precious metals investments mainstream at loadpay.com or load.one. Get ready to learn some cool stuff.
Yeah.
It's a truck. Well, hey, you know, I always have mad respect for people that have like mic stands and breath filters and stuff like that. So like
$70 on Amazon will get you a lot these days.
Oh man. Yeah. I could just put a ping pong paddle in front of mine and just have the same effect and be like, yeah, you know,
honestly, that stuff usually works equally as good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably does.
Not quite as thrifty. I'm not quite MacGyver.
You know? Hey man, it's the startup life. So do you do a lot of podcasting yourself or are you?
Well, I mean, kind of. I have recently been booked on quite a few podcasts, and for my own corporation, of which I am the VP of product, I'm a bit of the Swiss Army man, if you know what I mean. I wear many hats and many roles, and one of those roles is being the anchor for our media channel, where I do the interviewing. So I'm literally in the reverse position, the same position you are.
Oh, cool.
And so I talk to experts in the field of precious metals and cryptocurrencies and technology at large to a lesser extent. And then I also fulfill much of the sort of roles of chief marketing officer and VP of product design. So really, I have a really wide breadth of things I can talk about.
Oh man.
Better or worse.
And we've only got 30 minutes. We're going to have to like break this up into a 17 part series. Cause
I mean, if your audience can deal with me talking for that long, I'm not going to say no.
I'm not going to lose listenership, man. Talking about this kind of stuff always gets me going. I've never really understood a lot about the precious metals and Bitcoin space. I wish I did. It's like, that's an area that I want to like learn more about. So I guess this is my opportunity selfishly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in full transparency, I've been in blockchain for maybe 5 years now, more or less, give or take a couple months, and precious metals as well is something that I've learned a lot about over the past 3 years, because I didn't originally come from that background, right? That wasn't what I went to school for. So cryptocurrencies weren't even around, circa 2009, right? So, there's a lot to learn, but it's really, really interesting stuff once you get beyond sort of the hype cycle of like when Lambo, when Moon, Dogecoin, you know, pump, dump, diamond hands, and all the sort of things that you see in the popular media. It really is, a captivating premise with blockchain and with precious metals. Understanding that they are both industrial metals, gold to a lesser extent, but silver, one of the biggest commodities in the world, used in everything from clean technology to the microphones and the headsets that we're wearing, but they're also monetary metals, right? That for most of the world's history, we actually used gold and silver as a medium of exchange and a unit of account. And as a store of value, and that their purchasing power and their appreciation when compared to that of a fiat dollar, your average US a dollar or Canadian dollar. I'm Canadian, so
yeah.
The power of that US dollar comparatively has collapsed by like 96% in the case of the United States dollar. So whereas like, what a gram of gold could get you 100 years ago is consistent, if not better, right, than with what it can get you today versus the US dollar, where, when you were a kid, you went and you got a soda pop and, cost you a buck, maybe 98 cents. And now it cost you $2.50.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
So, you know, that's precious metals in a nutshell. And on a macro scale, these metals have been actually manipulated by large institutions for decades. And, you know, I can see some people maybe going, well, that's a conspiracy. Well, it's not. And it sounds like a conspiracy, like, but the reality is these banks and these institutions have been caught red-handed. They've been given slaps on the wrist multiple times for manipulations of the markets. And, you know, for us retail investors, us people on the ground floor and not in an ivory tower, you know, there's a real desire to see this manipulation come to an end and to have the metals, quote unquote, true values be represented in the market. And, so yeah, I'm sorry, I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but it's really easy for me to do that. So I'll rein it in a little bit, and we can talk more about the Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and what we do with the project too. But I'd like to learn more about your podcast and more about yourself.
Well, sure, man. So you don't have to ever apologize for any kind of rambling. It's like, this is good information. I don't know if you can see the monitor shaking a little bit while I'm typing. I'm like, this guy knows his stuff. Like, I'm taking notes about like what kinds of questions I can come to you with. But as far as what I do, I mean, it's kind of a mix of like a lot of different technology, you know, so software dev, software testing, continuous everything. You know, I'm a huge nerd at heart. I'm also not doing what I went to school for, but it's somewhat related. It's gotten a lot more into like the marketing and sales aspect and kind of blending a little bit of psychology with technology. So I spend a lot of time getting into people's heads, which sounds kind of woo-woo, but kind of helping them feel good and safe about a new solution and helping them understand like, here's where it fits into the bigger picture. And then let's build things that are a custom fit for them. So over the years, it's taken us actually really deep into the finance sector because there's a lot of compliance, there's a lot of regulations, and it makes software really complex. And then they're like, holy moly, how do we automate the testing for this? Or how do we deliver the software faster? It's just, we're getting slower and slower. Can you speed us up? Absolutely. But it's also a cultural change that comes with that. You know, a lot of people are going to feel a little about, you know, wholesale change on what they're doing and how they do their work from day to day. So it's like, don't freak out. It's okay.
Yeah. I mean, man, that's one of my favorite topics, to be honest. And I think there's a little bit of a, especially with the, when it comes to the market psychology or consumer psychology, there's this element of like ethicality to it as well. Like, you know, our brain is basically the same thing from 10,000 years ago. And meanwhile, we've advanced technology at such a rapid rate that, you know, our reach almost exceeds our grasp a little bit. People, as we've learned through this pandemic and through, you know, the past few years, is that tech has the power to completely sway our perception on things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that we're really quite fragile and prone to manipulation. And I think, you know, what we're seeing in the big tech space now is a little bit of a pushback on that kind of psychology and that kind of behavior in trying to now take back a little more from big tech,
mm-hmm.
At least in some instances. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, antitrust suits come forward and a lot of propositions to break up the kind of Googles and Apples and Facebooks of the world and from this sort of oligopoly that they have around us. And then on the flip side of that, there's also the really fun stuff, which is like, how do you make something convenient and really valuable for people, right? How do you tap into that? How do you tap into that sort of sense of ease for people and make something just totally intuitive? And that's, in my opinion, one of the biggest things that is blocking the blockchain and cryptocurrency industries today.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you've ever tried to buy Bitcoin back in 2017, it was a learning curve, like running into a brick wall,
mm-hmm. right?
It was not so much a gradual curve as just like running into a 90 degree angle. And even today, you know, there's been lots of progress made, but it's still quite a heavy lift for somebody to go from using a debit credit card, which is integrated with all of our facets of life in the modern world, to using this technology. And how do we, for me, it's really about like, how do we get people to the point where they're not even thinking about whether or not this is on a blockchain or if this is a cryptocurrency anymore?
Yeah.
When grandma goes to the store, she's not thinking about how the technology of a credit card works or what is the technology underpinning a credit card. She just knows that she goes to the grocery store, she taps her card, and it's done. Right? Money's been sent, and it's all Gucci. And similarly, you know, the industry, the blockchain industry needs to get that point if it wants to live up to its promise of, you know, separation of money from government and kind of like being a new reserve currency and the money of the people, yada, 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 all these narratives, the money of the future, so to speak. In order for us to truly achieve that initiative, that convenience has to be there along with it. So yeah. Really fascinating subjects to dive into.
It is. Well, I'm kind of reminded of, well, I know this comedian's kind of fallen out of favor because reasons, but Louis C.K., did a routine a while back where he was talking about, man, you remember back in like 1980s, if you went to the store and you wanted to buy something with a credit card, you were like, ugh, and they got to like pull this machine out and shunk, and they got to like call the president to see if you actually have money. Right. And now it's like that technology is ubiquitous. Like you probably have maybe 7 credit cards any given moment in your wallet that are like all the different things. This is my Amazon. Here's a Visa. Here's a Lowe's card. And it's like, holy moly, you know, like that makes up a lot of the real estate, but that technology has gotten ubiquitous. And I think when you get it to the point where, like you said, people don't even have to think about it, then that's when things really take off. That's when it starts to really dig into society and it just becomes, well, yeah, like what else would you use? What else is there but Bitcoin? Like, come on, seriously? You're going to use paper money? You're going to pay with your hands like an idiot? Oh my goodness. So, yeah.
No, you're bang on the money there. And this is a really important piece that I've tried to communicate to people in a lot of the podcasts that I talk to is that, you know, speculative value is great. Of course, you know, everybody wants to ride the winds and, you know, go on the roller coaster up to $100,000 and beyond, you know. That I get that. And, you know, and companies like Tesla buying in are great, but that speculative value is different from the practical value and the actual application of that technology in our world today.
Right.
You know, financial markets, as we've seen, are extremely prone to market sentiment. And so at the drop of a hat, you know, sentiment could change and the asset could collapse because there's no inherent value behind it. It's just technology that mm-hmm. people put their faith into. When you're going to see prices stabilize a lot more in the blockchain and cryptocurrency markets when that practical value lines up with that speculative value, when people are actually able to apply it in the sense that you just said, and that's what's actually going to bring the mass adoption, not the big media hype cycles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is making it easy enough for Grandma Pearl to understand. And getting it everywhere, all the different applications, getting buy-in, that is key.
Yeah.
I just realized I'm like, I got halfway into this interview and I don't even know how to pronounce your last name.
Oh, it's Proutin.
Proutin. Okay. I was like, it's either Proutin or Proutin. There's like a 50-50 chance here. So at least I know it. I'm like, I got to ask.
The first two questions people come up with. It is a French name, but... it's been bastardized over generations of Anglophone
use. Yeah. Well, how would you say it if it was French? Would it be like Prouton? Huh? Yeah. Like rhymes with Prouton? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
The Ile de Prouton is where the name comes from, and I think it straddles some kind of border between France and England.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Proutin.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Something like that, if I'm getting my family history right. But
here we go.
What's interesting as well about what we do, what the project I work on is, which is called Load, is we're kind of taking the technology of blockchain and applying it to the old standard of precious metals and modernizing this asset for this new digital economy that's being created. I talked a little bit earlier about how gold and silver were monetary metals. And have been monetary metals through most of the world's history. And there's a huge movement for people to return to that kind of standard because these metals have inherent value. And that is beyond sort of, you know, that of the debt of an economy of a country or, you know, the hands of a small group of people. You know, that value of those metals is inherent. And because of that, the value is much more stable and less prone to inflation than fiat capital is, mm-hmm. you know? So it's about protecting that, as a medium of exchange and a store of value. It's about protecting your wealth over a longer period of time and not being victim to a boiling frog metaphor. I'm sure you've heard that metaphor before, mm-hmm. where you're actually losing value in your money, but it's so slow that you don't realize it. Right.
Right. Right.
And cryptocurrency on the other side of that can be a really intimidating space. You know, Bitcoin, you know, goes up 50%, down 50% in the blink of an eye. For people who kind of want to dip their toes and get started in the industry and want sort of a reasonably safe entry point, gold and silver is a great way to do that. Right. Mm-hmm. And, whereas in traditional gold and silver markets, you're either buying, you know, silver ETFs or paper silver, and it's very difficult or, you know, painful to reclaim that silver. You're not going to get that silver at spot price. There's going to be a massive premium attached to that. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes as high as 50% markup. And then when you go to exit, when you go back to that bullion dealer saying, hey, silver's up, I want to sell, they're going to ding you at a couple points under that spot price. Right. So again, you're hemorrhaging value. What we are able to do, because we are able to buy on a much larger scale than your average consumer, is turn that around and pass the cost savings on to people so they can get into actual physical gold, actual physical silver for a fraction of the retail cost and redeem it for a much better rate than they can with a traditional bullion dealer. So there's multiple angles in which having this digital gold and digital silver accessible to people is of benefit. If you're just a speculator and investor, that's great. You know, prudent financial planning suggests that 10% of your portfolio should be in gold and silver. You could go to just about any financial planner, and as long, you know, and most of them will agree with that theory, you know, for your financing. You know, full disclosure, not a financial advisor, please go get professional opinions. but that is a commonly held and understood practice and behavior. And on the flip side, if you live in a nation that struggles with their currency, that's prone to hyperinflation, you know, Venezuela, Argentina, you know, there's lots of countries within the African subcontinent that are struggling, you know, having a stabilized medium of exchange like gold and silver, that you can easily send and spend on your phone is a great alternative to these fiat currencies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a little bit of doomsday prepping going on here, but I think it is naive. If you're given a long enough timeline, all fiat currencies have failed. Every single one, not a single one has survived. And when you look at the world on a macro scale, you know, we feel very safe here in the United States and in Canada and most developed nations, but nothing is impervious. And I think the instability that we've seen over the past 4 years has really illustrated that really at the drop of a hat, anything could change. And then what happens if all of a sudden, you know, your assets are now, you know, worth a fraction of the of value, you know, all your dollars and all your savings accounts are worth a fraction of what they were because you have it stored in the dollar and not in an asset or in something that will appreciate or hedge your value. So I think that's really important for people to look at these alternatives and look at, you know, how to protect their value for future generations.
Interesting. You know, it really has. And I guess I wasn't super interested in this kind of stuff earlier in my life. It sounds like you've been exposed to this at an early age. I wasn't. Is that accurate? Have you always
depends what you define as an early age.
Your 20s. Yeah, are you in your 20s right now? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm freshly 30 and the wound is still open there, but but you know, I really didn't start getting interested in finance and you know, investments until about 5 years ago or so. And I honestly blame cryptocurrency for my now avid enthusiasm for the subject, right? Yeah. It kind of opened my eyes. I was working on an e-commerce platform at the time, actually, and they said, oh, I want to accept cryptocurrencies. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
like what's wrong with your money, right? Like regular money. Why don't you just want to take regular money like a normal person was kind of my thought process at the time. And then, you know, that kind of opened the door. Like, what's wrong with it? Why would you want to use a different currency other than the currency you know, that you already have. And that really cracked the egg open for me from a logical standpoint of starting to ask questions. And I just went deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And now it's a, you know, an avid, you know, point of passion for me. Although my partner, her eyes will just gloss over anytime I start talking about Bitcoin or finance or anything.
Oh my goodness. My wife is the same way. It's like, I have to rein it in. I can easily geek out and I'm like, I'm going to lose her. She's like, hey, I can tell from the tone of your voice, you're excited about it, but I don't know what you're talking about. So keep up the great work. So I'm like, I come in and I'm like, I had an awesome podcast guest. I learned some cool things. And she's like, you say that about every guest. And I'm like, I know, I have awesome people, right?
That's the point.
That's the point. Oh, I had a really dullard of a guest. Like, no, that's never happened. So, you know, I'm curious about something like kind of going back to the idea of, you know, the fiat currency and like why is it that so many people put their trust in that? Like, why don't people automatically think I should diversify? I don't need to have dollars. I need to have gold or buildings or, you know, real estate or whatever. Like, why do people just gravitate toward that? Is it easy? Is that why?
Well, I mean, the systems that, going back to that ubiquitous sort of nature of things, like our entire system and infrastructure is set up to process transactions using these fiat currencies. We used to have more faith in our institutions. Mm-hmm. You know, at one point, you know, America was it. It was the biggest economy in the world. And, you know, there was a lot of confidence and American was the bastion of truth and hope and faith and freedom. And I know that's still a truth for a lot of people. But my point is here is that, you know, people were less exposed to the volatility and the risks, and there was perhaps less risk and volatility during those periods of time. And the other side of it is education, right? We're not all economists. We're not all born to be economists. But we should all have a base level. And I don't know how it is in the United States, but I growing up didn't learn how to do my taxes. Not in the school. And you had to choose that for yourself, right? And you learned virtually nothing about economic policy and financing and how to generate wealth and store wealth and preserve wealth for yourself as part of your education. That has to be something that you opt into, which to me is a big, big mistake, because you have all these people who aren't learning how to live within their means, let alone, take their wealth and make it grow. And so I think this in part is something that we are combating. And thanks to the internet, a lot more people are exposed as to how to do that. And for a lot of people, that first instance of doing that is Bitcoin. If you go onto Reddit forums and you go into, subreddits and so on and so forth, lots of people, it becomes evident talking to them that this is their first time investing in anything. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
You know, the last point I want to bring up is kind of related to that. In many instances, a lot of the solutions for general wealth generation have kind of been gatekept. And I'm not saying that as a eat the rich, kind of attitude. It's just the reality of it. If you were not an accredited investor, if you didn't have a few hundred thousand sitting in the bank and a couple million in assets, you did not have the opportunity to participate in, being a liquidity provider or getting access to some of the initial offerings that companies would do. Like there was a barrier to entry that was beyond the means of the average person. Mm-hmm. And what blockchains and cryptocurrencies have done to a very big extent is take those same financial benefits that was previously very exclusive and open the door to the retail investor to have access to these things. And that's in part what this huge movement around decentralized finance is about, right? And this is why this industry at large is responsible for one of the biggest wealth generation events, if not the biggest wealth generation event of our lifetimes. It's a pretty crazy thing to watch happen. It's created it's lifted so many people out of poverty. You know, it's incredible. And I think that it's still very early days in that respect, and that you should not buy into the fanaticism and be prudent and be smart about it. But, I think that gatekeeping, going back to your initial point, is is sort of the third barrier as to why people are kind of ignorant to these solutions and these alternatives out there, is because there was a knowledge requirement and there was also a financial requirement in order for you to participate in historically.
Right. Man, there's so much to unpack here. I mean, we're talking psychology and ubiquity and technology and education and all the stuff that's in between. It's like you're poised. I'm sold, really. So you're poised to really change the world at a fundamental level in a way that it's going to take more than just this podcast to fully understand. I mean, this is a link in the chain. This is something that I hope people listen to it and they're like, I need to find out more about this. This sounds pretty legit, or at least this guy knows what he's talking about. So I need to kind of hang around him a little bit more kind of thing. So,
I appreciate you saying that. And honestly, it is people like you that are helping us to bring the message of what we're doing out to a larger audience. And that plays a really, really important role, right? Like, we've done a lot of the heavy lifting to provide a safe and secure platform that really leverages the best parts of blockchain and cryptocurrency and bring that to people. And, you know, individuals like yourself, where I can have great discussions and talk about what's passionate to myself. And, you know, that's, you guys play a really, really vital role, because we can't, it's not like, you know, if you build it, they will come, right? Mm-hmm. You need to have an audience, and you need to find ways of exposing yourself to this. And that has been another huge challenge. I know we're kind of coming up on the end of our half an hour, but because blockchain technology disrupts to a very big extent the traditional power hierarchies within the world of finance, you know, centralized banking, fractional reserve banking, fiat government-backed or government currencies, all of these traditional institutions, which have had the benefit of being the only players in the space for, you know, the past century or so, are now being thrown for a loop for this type of currency that they can't control. They can't mint more of it. People don't need this third party to process transactions anymore. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, there have been a great deal of regulators that have either, you know, tried to push back against the industry and shut it down or make it very difficult or inaccessible. And a lot of big tech as well, you know, either wants to try to create something to compete with Bitcoin or compete with the currency space, and will outright ban you from participating in advertising on the platform and marketing on the platform. You know, to this day, we still can't advertise on Facebook, because Facebook has its own blockchain department and they're trying to produce their own cryptocurrency and so on. So they don't want the competition, using their audience to gain traction, because that deprives them of, their own market share. Yeah. And so, you know, how do you get the message of what we're doing when, you know, Google and Facebook, you know, the go-tos for just about every marketing agency you'll talk to, are not accessible to you? How do you do that? And podcasts and interviews and stuff like that play a really, with influencers like yourself, they play a really, really important role in how we get that message. And I think it's a more genuine way of doing it. I think we're all a little saturated from traditional advertising. At least I am. You know, I tend to click through the YouTube ads as fast as I can. It's almost become cable television.
It's like, come on, click. There it is. Ah. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, this is just a pre-interview, right?
Well, I'm going to push it up. I mean, there's good stuff. So, I mean, the format has been a little bit different, but I'm like, this is a good conversation. I'm going to push this up. This is good stuff. I mean, this is something that, you know, you've been able to share, like, what your company does, what it's all about, the change you see in the world. And I'm looking at the questions and I'm like, we hit all the stuff that I was going to ask. I guess the only other thing I would have is, like, how would people find your project? Like, are you online somewhere? Like, is it up and running and in a beta or what's the deal?
Yeah, for sure. So I'll quickly cap it all off here. So the project I work for is called The Load Project. You can check us out at loadpay.com or load.one. Loadpay.com specifically deals with our mobile wallet technology. So if you're interested in getting started in purchasing a little bit of digital gold, digital silver, some Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever, and storing it safely and securely on your phone, you can do that and download our mobile app, which is called the LoadPay mobile wallet. And you can find that in all your common app stores. And you can learn about the features on it on the website and create a member account, and, or as we like to call it, a citizenship, and you know, start your journey today. We have all of your favorite social media channels, you know, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, et cetera, et cetera, usually under LoadPay Media. And you can reach out to me personally on Twitter via just at Nicholas Broughton. If you want to have a conversation with me, I'm very friendly. We also have a Telegram group. So, you know, creating a member account is a really quick, you know, 30-second experience. And the Telegram group is where a lot of the sort of really big enthusiasts for this project sort of habituate and talk and collaborate. And if you're interested in learning more and, you know, really getting into the meat and potatoes of what we're all about, I'd recommend taking a minute and just joining that community. And, you know, we can speak directly. And yeah, you know, we welcome everybody. We're active in over 100 countries. So I hope at least that what I've spoken about today is interesting, and that you guys want to come on the ride with us.
That would be a lot of fun, man. I've always been looking for ways to diversify my own portfolio and do more than just throw money at a mutual fund and let it sit there. You know, it's like, I want to take more control of my fundages and see what happens. So I want to make sure I've got this right for the show notes here. So loadpay.com, LoadePay.com. Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, and then that's the mobile wallet website for people who just kind of want to like hop in and go at it. We also have load.one.
Load.one. Like the word one?
Yeah. Load period. The word one.
Okay.
O-N-E. And that website is there for people who are perhaps more interested in coming in maybe on an equity level, right? We have some equity offerings that are open to people. You know, you can read the project paper, the technical project paper, if you're a more technical minded person. So they both serve different roles. One is much more retail oriented for people who are just like ready to get up and go. And the other one is sort of the primary investment website. So,
okay. Awesome, man. This has been really good. I didn't know that there were people out there grappling with this on this scale. Like, I've known people over the years that are like, oh, I'm making a new crypto coin, I'm making a new currency. And then it just kind of fizzles. And it's like, man, like part of me was like, it's kind of sad. People are spinning up and getting all excited, and then it just winks out, you know?
I think a practical application is a big deal. Like, and one of those applications with blockchain and cryptocurrencies is, you know, creating an investment asset, right? Here, you can invest with me with a crypto coin, but you've essentially just created a security. You've just created a stock, and you've just put, you put it on a different technology, but it's still just a stock.
Right.
You know, and that's why a lot of these projects end up fizzling out or going nowhere. Creating blockchain technology that has practical application is something that is much rarer. And when something has a real valid use case, those projects tend to do very, very well. Right. Mm-hmm. And so creating what's called stable coins, which is, you know, assets that are backed by real things, you know, digital assets that are backed by real tangible assets, is a real niche use case in the market. That we fulfill. And, you know, that's part of the reason. The other reason is regulation is really hard to deal with. I'm talking about you, we've been at it for 3.5 years. And honestly, for a while, it was like, it was like cryptocurrency is fine. You go to bed, wake up, oh, cryptocurrency is banned. Oh, you go back to bed, you wake up again. It's like, okay, it's good here, but not here. And, you know, how do you navigate that landscape when it's constantly shifting around? It's no small task, and it costs quite a lot of money when it comes to the legal fees.
No joke. I think navigating like just government project waters is troublesome enough, and that's something we're getting into. And it's like, oh my goodness, like what in the world? Just, I mean, I get it. They have to gatekeep to an extent, but sometimes it's like borderline ridiculous. Like, guys, you need help with this? We do that. Let's make some magic happen. No, I got to fill out form 273B-170. Oh, am I going to just farm it out?
Yeah, I know. You're like, kill me now. But I will say one of the most important entrepreneurial lessons I've learned is just do it. Bite the bullet. Yep. Work with the regulator. You'll get a lot further. I know that there's some kind of a little bit of a power fantasy that goes on with sticking it to the man and, you know, like, you know, disrupting the system, so to speak. But you know, ultimately, like I said before, it's an education thing. You know, you just bring these people along with you and they're going to be a lot more amicable to working with you and allowing your project to exist than if you just kind of go in, you know, guns blazing like Libra did and or Facebook did, you know, with their Libra asset. And Facebook is not a small company. This is one of the biggest companies in the world. And you would think of all people, they would be able to get away with it, right? But regulators were really quick to slam the brakes on them and say, absolutely not. Like, you, here's a mountain of legal work that you have to go through before you can ever touch the light of day with this project.
Yeah.
That's because they didn't work with people. They just kind of just fired some buckshot, right? Mm-hmm. So anybody interested in creating blockchain assets or cryptocurrencies or wanting to work in the space, you know, that's my takeaway advice for them is, you know, don't fear the regulators. Learn to work with the regulators and your project will go a lot farther. And often they're, you know, those institutions, those same regulators are looking for those practical applications of blockchain technology to benefit, you know, the economy. So yeah, I'll close on that.
That's a good closing point too. Cause it's like, if you can find evangelists out there that are in the regulatory space, it's like, man, if you turn somebody in there into a champion, holy moly. Well, I'll let you bounce, man. I'll let you get back to the rest of your day. I've got what I need. This is going to be a great episode. So I'm going to go ahead and push this up and let you know when it's scheduled to go live. Okay.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I had a lot of fun talking with you. Please just send me the email when it's ready to go and we'll get it out through our channels as well.
All right. Will do, sir. Well, thank you for your time today. All right.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. Did you hear this episode and go, wow, I'm a founder and all my friends keep telling me I should get on a podcast. Would I be a fit? Yes. Yes, you would. Every single person who steps out of their comfort zone to build their dream has an amazing story to share. And this is the platform for you to do that. If you want to talk about your dream, what led you to start your endeavor, what successes you've had or challenges you've been pitted against, this is the podcast for you. So head on over to archdevops.com/podcast to find out how to get on. And also check out our free tip sheets on guesting or even hosting your own podcast. This is Fritz, your host, hoping to meet you on the other side of the hot mic at ArchDevOps.